This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, the constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. And I want to wish you a very happy Easter weekend. Coming up a little later in the show, we'll be hearing from the newly elected representative from Kansas, Ron Estes, as well as pollster George Barna. And you won't want to miss Tony's discussion about Syria with Arizona Representative Trent Franks. But first, last weekend, as Coptic Christians were gathering for worship on Palm Sunday in Egypt, bombs went off, killing and wounding dozens. Dr. Tom Farr, president of the Religious Freedom Institute, joined Tony on Monday to talk about those bombings.
Tom, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Glad to be with you, Tony.
Tom, what do we know so far about these attacks that took place in Egypt yesterday?
Well, we know they follow a long pattern of attacks on our Coptic Christian brothers and sisters in Egypt. These things have been going on and intensifying in recent years. This one, like most of the predecessors, this attack was mounted by ISIS or some form, in this case it's ISIS, but in other cases other forms of radical Islam. Our hearts go out to these people, and I would remind your listeners that this has happened very recently. We had attacks in December. We had, again, attacks in February. It seems to be mounting in intensity, but in fact, this is not new. It isn't just within the last several months. I'll never forget, and I assume that none of your listeners will either, the terrible image of the 21 Coptic Christian men kneeling on the shores of the Mediterranean back in 2015 with those orange prison suits on, and each one of them with an ISIS terrorist hooded and a machete behind them. And many of those men died with the name of Jesus on their lips. That was a terrible, terrible incident, but one that is continuing in similar ways. And the president, who had just met a few days ago, President Trump had met with President El-Sisi of Egypt, called El-Sisi and expressed his confidence that the Egyptian government would be able to protect the Christian minorities, the Christian citizens of their country.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that, Tom, because the Coptic Christians make up about 10% of the 90 million people living in Egypt, both Protestant and Catholic Coptic believers. The government under El-Sisi, what are they doing? Are they adequately protecting Christians? I know there are some Coptic Christians saying, you know, they're not given access to certain government positions and jobs, and there seems to be kind of almost a second type of citizenship, a secondary citizenship, second-class citizenship. Are they getting the full protection of the law from the government against these ISIS attacks?
Well, the government has initiated, the president has initiated a state of emergency. The church that was in Alexandria, the Church of St. Mark, which is an ancient church, which was bombed, the police actually were able to prevent the attackers from getting into the church, which they unfortunately did, and the other one, which is where most of the people were killed. But I would make the larger point, Tony, that this is an ideology that they are fighting. And while security measures need to be increased, our own military measures against ISIS in Iraq and Syria are vital. Even if completely successful, the bullets, no bullet, no bomb, no military force or security regime ever implemented can stop this kind of vicious ideology. It's a war of ideas going on within Islam, and as good as I think this administration has been in the short term, I think there is much to do that we are not doing that we need to be getting involved, because it's not just Christians and other minorities overseas. This has hit us here in our homeland. It's the same disease. It's the same ideology. And unless we can get involved in this in a productive and helpful way, I fear that we're going to be suffering, and the Egyptians are going to be suffering this over the long term.
Well, I think more. You're right. I think it's more than just the Egyptians. There is a correlation between what's happening here at home in terms of our domestic policy and the hostility toward the Christian faith that we've seen in the last 8 years, and the growing attacks on Christians internationally. I think it sends a message, basically sends a green flag to terrorists and tyrants abroad when our own government is indifferent to religious freedom here at home.
That's right. And you may recall last year, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, which is designed to protect the civil rights of every American, issued a report in which the chairman said religious freedom is a front for bigotry and hatred and Christian supremacy. That's the first freedom of the American Constitution being treated this way by a government official. So we have a big problem here. But when it comes to overseas, I think there's some things that we can do about it. One is the administration needs to go ahead and appoint immediately a qualified, talented ambassador at large for international religious freedom, which is the individual who would be most focused on this issue overseas. And I'm hearing the administration is putting out suggestions that they're going to wait until the fall. Well, we can't wait. People cannot wait for us to get in this game. So I would urge those who care about this to get to the, particularly the senators, to say, look, we need to get moving, because they would have to confirm this U.S. ambassador for religious freedom.
Thanks so much for being with us.
You can find out more about Tom Farr and the Religious Freedom Institute when you visit tonyperkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider a gift to Family Research Council as they continue to fight for your values in Washington, D.C. and around the country. Again, that's tonyperkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with the newest member of Congress.
America's primed for change. There's a new administration in Washington, and opportunity is the new buzzword in the nation's capital. But will we capture the moment that's before us? Join us at the 2017 Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C., as we explore the future for conservatives in America. Past speakers include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Paul Ryan, Michelle Bachmann, Kirk Cameron, Phil Robertson, and others. Register now for a special price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. On Wednesday's edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, Tony was joined by the newly elected representative from Kansas, Ron Estes. Representative Estes is replacing Mike Pompeo, who now serves as the director of the CIA for President Trump.
Republican Ron Estes is the winner of a special congressional election in Kansas. Congressman-elect Estes will take over the seat vacated by our good friend Mike Pompeo, who is now serving as President Trump's CIA director. Ron has been serving as the Kansas State Treasurer since 2011. With us now is the newest member of Congress, Ron Estes. Ron, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you very much for having me on today.
Well, I know it was a hard-fought battle. Was it a little more challenging than you thought it would be?
Well, it's an interesting situation that you run into with a special election. Any special election is a short time frame. There's a lower number of people that get out and vote. So a lot of our effort went into encouraging people to get out and vote and reminding them that the election was on April 11th.
The nice thing I like about the special elections is the pain doesn't last too long. Even if it's intense, it's like a sprint rather than a marathon. You got a short period of time. In this particular case, people tried to make it a referendum on Donald Trump and his agenda, and in the end, they fell short. They weren't able to do that.
You're right. It really was trying to make a referendum that Americans didn't really support what had happened in November. And at the end of the day, I think we sent a message loud and clear that, people made a conscious choice, not just in the 4th District in Kansas, but across the country. And in November, we wanted to change things in Washington. And I campaigned to continue working for that change. And at the end of the day, we prevailed because that's what the voters wanted.
Now, Ron, what did you see taking place from outside the state of Kansas, the influence of Democratic liberal money coming in to try to sway the voters?
Oh, there was a lot of outside liberal Democrat money coming in. our opponent probably raised more than, you know, any other Democrat candidate has raised in a long period of time. And most of it was from outside groups. And so they bussed people in to campaign and tried to make it appear like it was the majority of the voters and the residents in the 4th District, but really it was outside influences that were causing that impact.
So, Ron, what would you say is at the top of your list of things you want to accomplish as a new member of Congress?
I think probably the two biggest ones that I want to go push on is regulatory reform. I mean, we saw it in the Treasurer's office. Businesses see it. We see it as individuals that, these agencies from the federal government come down and want to dictate to us how to live our lives. And, you know, it's hampering us in so many ways. The economy's growing very slowly. And has been for several years. If we can increase that economic growth from 2% a year to 3% a year, it'll generate more wealth for individuals, more jobs, more higher paychecks, and therefore the economy will grow and actually we'll end up having better tax receipts as well. So that's one thing, is relieve that regulatory burden. The other thing that I'd like to do, and I know this is not necessarily a this year goal, it's a longer term, is let's get, you know, has to manage its budget like we do as individuals or like businesses and don't spend more than we bring in.
It's a novel idea, but something certainly that Washington could benefit from. Ron Estes, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I know it's been a very, very busy few weeks as you've been in the special election, and congratulations on your victory, and look forward to seeing you in Washington.
All right. Thank you very much.
You can find out more about Ron Estes when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, a look at faith and culture. Don't go away. We'll be back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
It's happening everywhere, and not just in blue states. Radical LGBT activists are forcing potentially dangerous bathroom policies on schools, businesses, and other public places, violating the safety and privacy of women and children and threatening religious freedom. In a special one-hour program, FRC President Tony Perkins is joined by public officials, experts, and victims to talk about what some states are doing to protect women and children and to defend the freedom to believe. Visit frc.org/privacy to view this event and many more.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. George Barna, founder of the Barna Research Group, is the executive director of the American Culture and Faith Institute, and he joined Tony on Friday of last week to talk about some interesting research he's recently completed on faith. Here's Tony Perkins.
George, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. It's great to be here.
George, you've just recently conducted some of the most in-depth analysis when it comes to worldview that you've done in your years of research.
Yeah, actually, it was the biggest study and the most in-depth study. We had 40 different questions about people's beliefs and behavior as it relates to worldview, and we interviewed over 4,000 people.
Okay, what were the results?
Yeah, essentially what we found out is among adults in America, people 18 years of age and older, only 10% have a biblical worldview. And you can break that down into different segments of the population. If you were to look, for instance, at born-again Christians, not people who call themselves that, because you can't really trust those labels, we've tested that, but people who say that when they die, they know they'll go to heaven only because they've confessed their sins and accepted Jesus Christ as their Savior. Only 30% of them have a biblical worldview.
Wow.
And then you can also look at things generationally to get a sense of, well, where's the country going? So if we look at the two oldest generations, the boomers and the builders, people 50 and older, what we see is that about 16% of those two generations combined have a biblical worldview. Among the next younger generation, Gen X or the baby busters, only 7% have a biblical worldview. And then when you look at the millennials, who are in the adult age range, the 18 to 30-year-olds, we're down to 4%.
So we're seeing a significant decline in that worldview among the general population?
That's right.
So when we're looking at that going forward, obviously worldview is very significant. It affects politics. It affects education. I mean, it affects everything.
Everything.
How do we fix that?
Well, there are a number of different ways we go about it. One of the most significant things has to do with parenting. And so when we look at the influence on a person's worldview, the three most important things are parents, media, and the law. All of those things communicate to individuals what's right, what's wrong, what's important, what's not, what the boundaries in life are. And so when we talk about parents, one of the reasons why I'm most concerned is when we look at millennials, they mm-hmm. are our current parenting generation. And of course, as a parent, you can't give what you don't have.
Correct.
Only 4% of them have a biblical.
So they don't have it to pass on.
Exactly. So that says that other individuals who do have a biblical worldview, grandparents in particular, would be one group I would look at and say, you know, if they've got it, they've got to step up and recognize that there's a role to fill there.
So it's almost like a worldview intervention. We need grandparents to step in for those that, and maybe they've not passed it on to their children, or their children are just not passing it on to their grandchildren, but there are tools and resources available to help people develop these biblical worldviews.
Yeah, certainly there are. And so it's imperative that people see that as a vital part of their mission, because we wonder, gee, why is church attendance going down? Why are fewer people sharing their faith in Christ with others? All of these things relate to the absence of a biblical worldview.
George Varno, what is the most critical time in which people or young people are developing that biblical worldview, where you would want to get in there and help them understand and walk through and develop that?
Yeah, great
worldview.
Question, because what we discover is that it's between the ages of 18 months old and 13 years old that a person's worldview is developed. Because you need a worldview to know how to respond to the world, it develops very early. And what we also discover from our research is that the worldview that you have at the age of 13 is, in most cases, and for the most part, the worldview you're going to die with. It may change a little bit as you age, but generally not very much. And so working with children is really the most important thing we can do. It is the primary mission field for the church in America.
Wow, that is significant. And we've got to move away then, I would suggest, from just telling Bible stories to imparting biblical truths if we're going to develop those worldviews.
And one of the most important things we see is dialogue between someone who has a biblical worldview and the person who needs it. And so if they watch a TV show, talk with them about what were the values, what were the principles communicated there. They go see a movie, they listen to a piece of music, they experience something out in the, at the ball game. I mean, all of those things need to be reflected upon, but that's not a natural part of the way that Americans live.
Correct.
We're into achievement and accomplishment and the next experience. Particularly the younger generation has heightened that, because that's the core of a postmodern worldview. It's about experiences. And so they want to move on and have more and more experiences without reflecting on the implications of the ones they've had.
So it's basically digesting what has taken place around us and figuring that how those pieces come into that worldview.
Seeing how it connects to biblical principles, which right. is not a natural tendency in American society.
You have to be intentional about it. George Varno, thanks so much for being with us. Always fascinating to talk to you. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Tony.
You can find out more about the American Culture and Faith Institute when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider a gift to Family Research Council as they continue to fight for your values in Washington, D.C. and around the country. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with an inside look at what happened in Syria last week.
In America, we now confront a crisis of governance created by our Supreme Court, which has become an almost unchallengeable, unreviewable super legislature by silencing all debate on pressing social issues like abortion and same-sex marriage. That's why the nomination of Judge Neil Gorsuch, who has a proven track record of ruling as a constitutional originalist, has pleased conservatives. For a full explanation of Judge Gorsuch's qualifications for that role and why he should be confirmed, visit frc.org/Gorsuch.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. On Monday's edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, Tony was joined by Arizona Congressman Trent Franks to discuss the military strike on a Syrian airbase and the repercussions being felt here at home and in the Middle East. Here's FRC President Tony Perkins.
Congressman Franks, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, sir. It's good to be back, always.
Well, Trent, I saw you over the weekend on Fox News talking about this as well as a member of the House Armed Services Committee. Obviously, you have spoken out in support of the president's decisive move to take actions against Syria. You, along with your colleagues, believe he did take the right move.
Well, Tony, I do. Probably one of the most difficult decisions any president ever makes is a military strike, because the implications include human casualty and the potential to escalate dangerous confrontations throughout the world. So I want you to know that I don't approach this with some sort of attaboy or go get them, Mr. President. This is something that I think he did that was both proportional and strategic, in that the proportional part of it, it was pretty incontrovertible that the American surveillance had tracked aircraft from this base to the tragedy that occurred. In fact, after they hit the civilians there with the sarin gas, then they bombed the hospital where the civilians went. So I just have to say to you, there was clear attribution here, and the president aimed at that source, and for that reason, I think you can say that it's clearly proportional. It's strategic in that it puts America back in the strategic position of saying, all right, if you want to affirm or support a guy like Assad that chokes his own little babies, the children of his own country with sarin gas, let Russia defend that to the world. Let Iran defend that to the world. We've been in such a difficult situation for the last 8 years where, the only reason we're talking about red lines right now is because Barack Obama drew one, and then it turned pink, and then it turned vapor. So now we've kind of put ourselves back in a strategic position. It's a very dangerous time because the Russians and Iran would like to reestablish themselves in the forward motion that they had under Barack Obama.
Congressman, what was the extent of America's attacks on that airbase? What do we know?
Well, I chair the Missile Defense Caucus, so I'm very familiar with the type of ordnance that we drop. These are Tomahawk missiles. They're about 18, 20 feet long. They're almost 24 inches across. They have a 1,000-pound conventional warhead. They fly at about 550 miles an hour, and they're extremely accurate. They can be reprogrammed in the air. They're extremely effective. There was a deliberate effort made to choose targets that didn't entail human casualty, whether it was Russians or Syrians. The effort was made not to do that. So this was a well-thought-out plan, and these 59 Tomahawk missiles, one of them fell in the sea, but 58 of them landed within a 3.5 to 4 minute period, which is a pretty dramatic display of resolve on the part of the United States part. And it indicates clearly that we could do a whole lot more if we wanted to, but that this is a statement that we're not going to stand by and let chemical weapons be used on innocent women and children, nor are we going to look past our national interest in making sure that that doesn't proliferate in the world.
Congressman Franks, the Russian and Iranian governments have spoken out against America's actions against Syria and say that further actions could result in them taking action against the U.S. Do you believe that Russia and Iran were enabling Assad's campaign of mass murder against his own civilians?
Of course they were, Tony. There's no question about that whatsoever. Even Russia's own attacks within Syria hit far more civilian targets, hit far more Syrian targets than they ever hit ISIS targets. Russia has killed multiple numbers more innocent Syrian civilians than they ever have hit ISIS fighters. So your question is really one that's without a doubt clear. The Russians and the Iranians have backed the Assad regime, not strictly to fight ISIS. We need to fight ISIS. No one wants to destroy that group more than I do. But the truth is, neither are acceptable. ISIS is unacceptable. We should wipe them out to the last person. And it's not acceptable to stand by and let Syria do some of the things that they're doing, because obviously there was a a fissile materials plant that was being built in Syria that could have threatened the whole world. And our Israeli friends, let's just say they dismantled it in a fairly dramatic fashion.
If they do make further moves, are we prepared as a country to do more if necessary?
Well, the honest answer to that is, Tony, we're not as prepared as we should be, but we are more prepared than anyone might think. You know, the United States, the arsenal of freedom, I call it, is still the most capable military force in the world. And even under Barack Obama, underfunding it and decimating it over the last 8 years, we're still a very capable nation. And I think Russia knows that. And certainly Iran does. So, I mean, we're not where we should be. And I'll tell you, a big point that should be made here is whether it's economically or in terms of our defense apparatus or in terms of our constitutional architecture in this country, we are so underwater. Barack Obama has left us in such a deep hole that now it's very difficult for Donald Trump to kind of put us back up on an even horizon. But I absolutely see him doing that, whether it's the appointment of Neil Gorsuch, whether it's an economic turnaround, whether it's the work that we're doing on Obamacare to try to bring back a market-based insurance policy in America, and whether it is trying to rebuild our military and to try to demonstrate to the world that America is committed to the ideals that made us who we are. And I just think that there are two people that should be very grateful for what happened in Syria recently. That should be those victims of the world that never thought anybody was ever going to be there for them again. Now mm-hmm. they know America is back. And for those terrorists, for those people that or have no concept of humanity toward the innocent, they need to realize that the arsenal of freedom is awake again and they may be in the crosshairs.
Trent Franks, always great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us on this Monday afternoon.
God bless you.
You can find out more about Representative Franks when you visit TonyPerkins.com. If you missed any of today's program, you can find a link to all the stories when you visit that website. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.